You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network from May 16th, episode 3713, brought to you by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
I have good news and bad news for you on this Monday morning. First, the bad. It's Monday. But the good news is really good. Jamie and Glenn are here to guide you through another week filled with horse talk and a whole lot of fun. Welcome to Horses in the Morning.
That's right. We are here for another week of fun, and we're glad that you're joining us today. We hit the letter K in our Breeds of the Alphabet series, and we're going to do the Nabstruppers, and we're joined by Melanie Worth of Cedar Creek Stables to tell us all about that particular breed. We're also going to learn how to draw horses with June Evers of Horse Hollow Press and her book, Anyone Can Draw Horses, the second edition, plus the chores we all hate the most around the farm. And then we'll have a post-show, but I'm not sure what we're talking about in the post-show yet, so we'll find out about that. Hey, guess who's back at it again? We talk about her every year for the last 15 years.
Oh, really?
She's 84 years old. Her name is Jane Dochen from Northumberland. Do you remember the lady in England that rides to the Scottish Highlands and back from her home 500 miles every year with her dogs and her horse? She makes this trip every year. We've talked about her every year. She's 84 years old. She rides from her home to the Scottish Highlands and back every year on her Irish cob pony Diamond and with her 14-year-old Jack Russell Terrier Dinky. By the way, Dinky rides in the saddlebag.
Okay, cool.
So get this. This lady's been doing this for years and years and years and years and years and years. So she had a hip replacement. She's lost an eye from a farm mishap in 1984. She broke a leg in 2023, and she's in imminent need of knee surgery. And she still said, I'm going to do this journey because I do it every year. It's a 6-week journey on her horse. And so she takes along oatcakes, sardines, cheese, Jane Camps. I don't know what those are. And she sleeps under the stars. Sometimes she has friends along the way that'll put her up. And she carries one of the old-fashioned brick phones. I don't even know what that is.
But it's one of the ones that you basically take it off the bottom of your foot. It's the size of a shoe.
Okay. Apparently, she said that this may be her final ride. She has persistent joint pain. And
why are you doing this? Stop!
Well, this is why she's doing it. She said, I could have an accident and drop dead at home. I might as well be doing it something I love. So there you go.
Okay.
So she's heading out. She makes a living, by the way. She lives off the grid. She has no TV. She makes a living bartering eggs and produce with neighbors. She enjoys solitude, and she lives basically out in the middle of nowhere. But she loves doing this trip every year, and she meets the same people on the trip every year and has a great time doing it. So good luck to Jane. Please be safe. Drivers are crazy nowadays, so they're a little different than when you started 40 years ago. So.
You go, girl. This is okay.
84. We hope we're all still just can get in the saddle at 84.
I know. That's amazing.
What does she carry? A mounting block with her? I don't know how she gets on and off, because, you know, that gets hard when you get older. I don't know. Anyway, good luck, Jane. By the way, I'm having a storm, so if I disappear and Jamie's gone, that's why.
I'll just take over. Yeah, now, if you disappear, I'm running the show.
You'll still be on. You can just do the rest of the show. Happy birthday to a bunch of our auditors, Misty Whitehouse, Stephanie Elizabeth, Lindsay Pierce, Mary Ellen Murphy, and Robin Donahue, my fellow cruiser, who's going next year again, too. So happy birthday to all of you.
Well, this is, it's the second time it's happened that it's happened kind of by choice. And what that means is my child just went to summer camp. but like he's gone for an entire week in a cabin, like doing summer camp stuff. Remember those camps where like the blob in the lake and everybody jumps out? He's going to one of those and he will be gone the entire week. The other part of this is Chad's gone tonight. So basically, I'm going to walk around my house completely naked, baby. I do have gates. Nobody can come in, but it is going to be... this is the only other time I've had the whole farm to myself was when we were supposed to go on a ski trip and I had a horse hurt an eyeball. And so I had to bail. And so the boys went skiing and I stayed here. And so, yeah, that's right. I am home by myself. Should I say all this? Nobody knows where I live, right? So like I can say I'm home. Is that unsafe? Should I edit that? I don't know. But I'll tell you, I'm going to go play with the ponies pretty much the entire day. I'm going to spend the night drinking wine. I have an outdoor shower. I'm going to take an outdoor. I mean, it's going to be just girl party all by myself. So yeah, it'll end tomorrow. But
it seems to be a 20-year-old, early 30-year-old thing to have an outdoor shower. They were never a thing in my day, but it seems to be every YouTuber we watch now puts in an outdoor shower.
Really?
Yeah. It's a YouTuber thing, too. They all have outdoor showers.
I did it on the back patio so I could wash the dogs before they come in. But
well, that makes sense.
I'm taking the opportunity. We do use it at times.
Yeah, you have nobody can see your back of your house. You're pretty safe there.
Yep, pretty safe. And if they do see it, well, lucky you. You get to see a 40-something-year-old woman showering outside. Wow, that's funny. Should probably edit all this out. This sounds very creepy.
No, I'm leaving this in. Sorry. This is Stan.
No. Have fun at camp, Lucas. That's what. Just leave that part in. My son's at camp. Have fun, buddy.
I think I was younger than him when I first went to camp. And all I remember about it is and this was traumatizing for me, they had community showers. So everybody kind of showered together. And that was the first time that ever happened because I was like 7 or 8 or something.
Oh, my God. That is the exact discussion that we had last night.
Oh, really?
I was like,
that's what I remember about camp.
I was like, dude, here's the deal. Because I went to camp too. And I went to 2 different camps. I went to one called Little Hope Ranch. And it was a horse camp where literally I should have died like 20 times. Like there was no supervision by the time I got there. The people were so old. They had horses. We just picked them out of the field and rode them. It was absolute craziness. And then I went to one called Winding Gap Camp. And that was in North Carolina. It's closed now. But basically, it was a month long. And... in
your
both of these,
really wanted you the hell out of them.
Oh God, they got rid of me. Hell yeah, they were like, "Bye, see you in a month." And I mean, I went for several summers in a row for a month to camp, and this is what I was trying to describe to him. I'm like, "Okay, when you're in summer camp, there's like a room, and everybody showers in this whole thing." So I was like, "Shower tonight," because first of all, I put some water shoes, shower shoes in there because I'm like, I remember those being really gross.
We wore flip-flops because we didn't have water shoes back then.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I had to dump the sand out of them from the last beach trip. And I put those in a suitcase and I'm like, here's your water shoes. Wear these into the showers. I was like, just trying to describe like, okay, I don't know, but it's probably going to be like in your cabin, there's a wall of waters spigots and like trying to describe basically like locker room
like
type showers.
yes,
like prison showers. And I was like, just keep to yourself, stay over in the corner, do your stuff and get it all. Keep the towel.
Very stinky and dirty. You won't have showered.
He's
at all.
Never going to shower. I mean, that's the magic of being 12 is like, I swam in the lake today. I don't need a shower.
And then you're in a room, there's like 85 bunk beds all in the room. I remember that. They were all together. I remember the girls and boys were separated. And ours were, this camp was I think it was a Christian camp of some kind. And it was separated. Like the girls were like way far away from the boys. It was completely separate.
Oh, yeah. This is a Christian camp. And this is his first kind of foray into a religious away overnight.
We had to do service every morning, too. We had to go to like whatever services were every morning.
Their service is every night. Oh. So it's like party all day and then church at night. And he is like, it's new. It's all going to be very new to him, right? But his friend was going, and it looks like a big party during the summer camp, you know? So, like, go. And it's really cheap because it's funded by the church.
Right.
So he went to this church camp, and yeah, the rules, I mean, it's like no tank tops, no PDA. Boys and girls are not staying anywhere close to each other. Yeah, it is like as extensive of like a private religious kind of school type situation that you could imagine. Like, I don't think that the boys will even talk to girls the entire time.
I remember canoes getting tipped over and people getting very wet. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you have memories, auditors, if you have memories of your summer camp, put them in the auditor room. We want to hear about it because I'm
absolutely
sure there's some good ones out there.
Okay, so I've got the rules here right in front of me. Let me see here. I gotta scroll down. Okay, so there's like a what to bring little like blurb, and then there's a what not to bring, and it is 4 miles long when you scroll. Like, no food or drink, no electronics, no cell phone, shaving cream shaving, no cell phone, no devices at all.
Which I remember
is awesome.
Because there weren't cell phones when I was in camp, and they had a phone, and you could allowed to call home once. I remember.
Oh, we weren't allowed to call home.
Yeah.
Tobacco products, no vapes, no weapons, no drugs, no skateboards, and no bad attitudes. And then there's like the clothing and all the rules. Camp is not a place for public display of affection. All clothes must cover shoulders, back, sides, and stomach. No tight clothing allowed. Shorts must be fingered.
At the Christian camp?
No thongs at the Christian camp. Shorts must be fingertip length. The rules were so long. So I was like, hey, buddy, just grab a book, put it in your bag, and see you in a week.
Fortunately, most kids' shorts or swimsuits are different than they were when I was growing up. Because when I was growing up, they were the short swimsuits. And now they're to the knees or past that. So.
Oh, they're not allowed to swim in bathing suits without shirts on. So everybody has to wear a bathing suit
boys?
With... Yes, the boys have to all wear shirts too.
Oh.
I'm not worried about them in this
No,
camp.
I think you're okay.
I think I'm okay.
Something else you don't have to worry about if you do worm flooring is your trailer roof or your trailer floor. And we had one of our auditors post that she just had her roof done. She had her floor done before. We're going to get her on next week to talk about how those are holding up. But worm flooring now does trailer roofs. It keeps them from getting so freaking hot. That's one of the things that happens, especially here in Florida or, you know, where Jamie lives or Texas or any of the really hot places. It gets so hot in the trailer. And this reflects back nearly 90% of the UV rays, keeping the trailer up to 60 degrees cooler on a blistering day. It's kind of this material they put on the roof that also stops it from leaking. And that's one of the things you have to worry about in trailer roofs is if you have vents up in the trailer roof, if you have air conditioners and living quarters, all that stuff, they're all prone to leaking around those spots. Every RV and trailer has that same problem. So forget about all that. Get some Seal and Chill. That is what it's called for the roof. It's $7.50 per square foot. And you can contact wormflooring.com to find a dealer near you.
It's time for Breeds of the Alphabet. From Arabians to zebras, we take you on an adventure, highlighting a breed for every letter of the alphabet. Can we do it? Stay tuned in 2025 and find out.
That's right. We're up to K in our Breeds of the Alphabet, and I would like to welcome Melanie Worth of Cedar Creek Stables. And yes, we are talking about well, Melanie and I are having a little discussion on how to pronounce it. I've always learned it's the Knobstrooper. Now, she breeds these horses. And so, Melanie, first of all, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
So we had a small disagreement. Explain to me how to say the name.
Well, the British and the Danes and the Americans say Knobstrooper. The K is silent.
Okay, but then how did I know it was the Knobstrooper?
Because you've probably been talking to a German. The Germans say Knobstrooper.
Well, I grew up riding with a German, and yeah, I've been around a lot of Germans, so yeah, okay. Well, for this interview, I will call it the Knobstrooper, even though it starts with the K, so it still qualifies as our K breed.
That's
okay,
right.
Even though the K is
right.
Silent.
It still counts.
So, yep. Melanie, where in the world are you?
I actually live in Virginia, here in the United States, and in the Shenandoah Valley.
Okay, I think there's country songs about that. So
it's beautiful. Virginia.
There's lots of them. Yeah. Yes.
Lovely. Well, tell us about the, I guess let's start at the beginning. How did the Nabstrup, God, it's hurting my brain. How did this horse come into being? Where'd they come from? What's the origin story?
The origin story of the Nabstrupper is that they're a Danish breed. So they're associated with Denmark and a little bit with North Germany, because there is a border between Denmark and North Germany. And they were bred mostly in Denmark, but some in Northern Germany as well. The legend of the origin is that a Danish army officer was serving as a mercenary in the Napoleonic Wars in 1815, 16, whenever. And he, at the end of the war, he had bought this horse in Spain, this chestnut mare with spots, and he rode her home to Denmark. And when he got back home, he was short of money, so he sold her to a local businessman called Flaber. And the mare got the name Flaberhoppen, which just means Flaber's mare. And she had a reputation for stamina and soundness and endurance. And she was much considered to be a very good animal. She was bred to a local Frederiksborg stallion and produced a colt foal called Flaber Hingster, which is Danish for Flaber's stallion. And that colt was the foundation sire for the Nabstrupper breed. Now, this is like, you know, early 1816, 1817-ish. The Nabstrupper was a working breed. It was a breed of horse that was used on the farms in Denmark. It was kind of the horse who sat out in the pasture, and when you needed to take the cart to market on a Saturday or, you know, light harness work. They were not draft horses, but they were work horses. They were used for whatever jobs they needed horses for. The big characteristic of the breed is that it carries the same color gene as the American Appaloosa, basically the LP complex with the white modifiers. So you get the spotting patterns, and you get the same range of spotting patterns in the Nabstrupper that you get in the Appaloosa. Everything from a, you know, varnish roan to solid white to many spots.
I've seen them when they are kind of like Dalmatian colored, you know. So if I was to describe the Nabstrupper, I would say that it's basically a really nice warm blood with the coloring of an Appaloosa. For those who haven't seen them before, would you say that was pretty fair?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair characterization. They're bred like a warm blood horse, but they carry that color gene. So you get a warm blood horse with spots.
Oh my gosh.
All the various color patterns.
So to keep me from looking like an idiot, if I see one of these horses out there, what is going to keep me from thinking it's an Appaloosa? And I ask that question because I have not met many Appaloosas that had beautiful tails. Does the Nabstrupper have a good tail and good hair?
Some do. Not all of them. The trouble with the LP gene is that it does carry with it, in some cases, a weakening of the hair. So in some of the horses, some of the Nabstruppers are tailless or very short tails, and some have very short manes, and some have full tails and full manes. It really depends more on the bloodline within the breed. It's not all of them by any means, but also some of them do. So yeah, I'm afraid you would see some with no tails, which is always unfortunate, because a tail is a beautiful thing on a horse.
It is. It sure is. So I mean, being in America and knowing that Nabstruppers are coming, kind of they're getting more popular for sure in the warm blood sports. What are their personalities like?
They were descended from workhorses. So they are very sensible, solid. They're hardworking. They're very cooperative, and they've got a good work ethic, but they're not stupid. They often are a little bit too bright for some people. But they are generally nice horses, kind horses, willing horses, and they, you know, do whatever's asked of them without too much trouble or discussion. And they're very sharp. They're very intelligent. They don't take a lot of training, which is, you know, good and bad.
Well, I'm going to use that from now on because I train a lot of off the track thoroughbreds and there's so many people that don't like them. And I'm just going to steal your line, which is they're too smart for some people. Okay. Like they're just too smart.
We can say that about almost every breed, I think.
I know. I love
that. That's right. That is true.
There's the quote of the week right there, Melanie. You get it.
They're too bright for you. Sorry. Yeah. I love it. Now there seems to be like different types because I've seen some of them kind of shaped as like, I don't want to say Spanish, more Baroque kind of type horses. And then also more like warm bloods, not as many, I guess they even kind of come in pony size, don't they?
They do. But in Denmark, you get them down to miniature size and then quite a few ponies. Now we don't
import
ponies here.
Miniature Knabstrupper, that would be cool to see.
I want one.
Yeah, a miniature Knabstrupper. You do. You get little leopard spotted stallions. They're adorably cute. We don't import those and we don't import the ponies because we have the ponies of the America. So we really don't have a need for the ponies, although they're pretty popular. Now, the original Knabstrupper, the original horse, the purebred, as close as you can get to a purebred, these very old breeds, it's very rare to have purebred of any kind with these breeds because they've been outcrossed for so many centuries. But The original Knabstrupper is about 15 hands to 15 to, built like a tank. They were a workhorse, so they were built to go in harness, they were built to take weight, they were built to be workers. They are not always pretty. Sometimes their heads are a little Romanesque, but they are built very squarely, very solidly, and very with great endurance. Now, we cross them. Not all Knabstruppers are straight Knabstrupper bloodlines. So there's a lot of thoroughbred, there's some warm blood, there's some Arabian. And when you've crossed them, of course, you get a different type and they will look very different. So you get quite a variation within the breed. Some of them look chunkier than others.
Why the cross? Why cross them?
To get partly for genetic diversity. The breed hit a genetic bottleneck in the 50s. It used to be bred at a place in Denmark called Kastrup Castle, and there was a big fire at Kastrup Castle, and it killed 22 of their stallions, which was a huge blow in a breed that was not numerically that great anyway. And the Danes recognized that there was a great risk now of genetic bottleneck. So they were permitted, you know, they talked amongst themselves the best way to keep the breed viable. And one of the things they did was they went to Canada and bought three Nez Perce stallions from the Indians and took them back to Denmark to have some genetic diversity. And they also allowed outcrossing. So now we have a lot of Knabstruppers that have different breeds involved, sometimes one or two generations back, sometimes six generations back, just depending on the individual breeder. So they're not a purebred breed in the sense of the thoroughbred, which is, you know, strictly by pedigree. They do allow outcrossing if, as long as it conforms to type and quality.
Gotcha. So is there like a, you know, with warm bloods, when I've had warm blood babies, they have to go to inspections. Do these horses get inspected and then put into the book?
Absolutely. They are an inspection breed. So they're inspected at several stages in their lives. Obviously, as babies, they have to be, if they are from registered parents that have a breeding license, the foal does not have to be inspected to get its passport, but it does have to be inspected before it's allowed to be bred. So if you have a filly foal, when she gets to 3 years of age, she has to undergo an inspection before she gets a breeding license. She cannot be bred until, she cannot have registered foals until she has herself been inspected. The stallions are even more inspected. They're inspected as a two-year-old for a preliminary inspection. And then again, at 4 years of age, they have to undergo a ridden test or a performance test where they have to be shown in harness or under saddle. And they have to do a series of things. They have to jump. They have to do dressage. They have to free jump. They have to gallop cross country. You know, there's a whole range of things they're tested for. And they have to pass this in order to get a breeding license. So, yes, they do have to be inspected and they do have to pass And the criteria is temperament and soundness and performance. They do not actually inspect them on color, with the exception that they do not allow what they call rat tails. So a stallion who has no tail is not allowed to get a breeding license.
Really?
This is one of the reasons why they don't have the same problem. There are a few in the breed that have no tail, but none of the breeding stallions are allowed to have no tail. And then they have to have a good temperament. And if they don't get a good score for temperament, they're not allowed to get them to breed.
Wow, I wish other breeds would be so picky. That would be fantastic. Yeah. So I'm looking at your website, and I found my dream horse, and his name is CCS Theoden. Theoden.
Oh, Theoden, and yes.
Yes, I would like that one. That's the exact one I want. Now, I do like the head on Gimli, because I love a big head, big chunky head.
Right.
But I do notice it says private treaty, so I'm going to go ahead and take myself out of the running, because I can never
right.
afford anything. That starts
you know
with
what that
private
phrase
treaty.
Means. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So if somebody was going to get one, Knobstripper, what advice would you give them?
I would definitely do some research, as in I would check out all the breeders you can find. It depends where they are. I'm assuming they're in the United States. If you're in America and you're wanting a Knobstripper, check out the local, meaning the United States breeders or the Canadian breeders first, because the transportation costs are going to be less. If you can't find the horse of your dreams amongst American breeders, go to Europe, go to Denmark. There's plenty of breeders in Denmark. And of course, if you want to import new bloodlines, different bloodlines from the ones that are already here, you're going to have to go to Denmark because, you know, that's where the breed originated. But yeah, I would start by doing some research on local breeders, you know, local meaning in America, it's a pretty big locality. So yeah, West Coast, East Coast, there's several in Canada, there's some in Florida. So they're around here, but you're going to have to search.
Okay, so I just went on a search on, I'm in front of a computer, so I'm shopping.
Okay.
So I just went on Dream Horse right now, and all of the Knobstrippers are private treaty. So
I don't know exactly what that means. That means I can't afford it? Is that what that
yes,
means?
Okay,
that's pretty
right.
much.
It means.
Got it, all right.
But there
it means
is
we don't
really
want to advertise. What it really means is we don't want to declare the price, because if we could get a little bit more for it, we will.
So depending on who's asking. If it's Jamie and I, you're going to have to come down. It can't be the high price.
Right. Yeah. Can't go high.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. There is a Glenn. Are you sitting down?
Yes.
On Dream Horse, there is a Blue Roan Frisian Knobstripper cross.
Oh, wow.
And
oh, my goodness me. Yeah.
It's a hot mess, but it's adorable.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also probably not got papers, because that's actually not a legal outcross for a Knobstripper.
Oh, but they'll use it in movies and TV. They'll have it in the movies and TV by tomorrow. So,
yeah. Oh, yes. I'm sure it's gorgeous, and everyone will fall in love with it and want it. And then there'll be this almighty fight, because the Danes will not permit it to be registered. But anyway. The Danes still control the registry. You still register them via Denmark, unless you get one from Germany, in which case you have to go through one of the German registries. But if you get one from Denmark, you have to go through the KNN.
Okay. Okay, so you guys, for real, buyer beware, okay? Like, okay,
oh,
here,
yes.
Actually, the mare, it's a mare, and her name starts with Stonewell, and they said she's registered through the Stonewell stud book. That's not
a thing. As a Stonewell sport horse, right. She's not registered as a Knobstripper.
No, oh my gosh, that's
Does
too
that
funny.
Mean okay. I could start my own stud book and just name it myself?
There you go.
Oh, yeah,
Glenn
could.
Stud book.
Glenn stud book.
Oh, God, gross.
You well, have Melanie, what we call manufactured breeds. You can decide you're going to breed, you know, spotted warm bloods from wherever it is you live, and you can start your own stud book. There's nothing
right.
to stop
yeah.
you.
Glenn's going to start breeding Appaloosas with Hackney ponies.
Yes.
And it's going to be a mess.
Right.
Don't do it, Glenn. Stop it. Okay. Melanie, where can people find out more about your place, Cedar Creek Stables?
Well, obviously from my website, which is terribly out of date, cedarcreekstables.org/.net.
U.S. .us.
.us. That's one place. We have a Facebook page, Cedar Creek Stables, which is a little more up to date than the website. There's also a website for the KNN, literally capital K, capital N, capital N. They have a website and they have a Facebook page. They will get you in contact with any Danish breeders and suppliers. And then we have a Facebook page called the Knabstrupper Breeders Network, which is on Facebook, which is where Knabstrupper breeders and producers from all over the world kind of, you know, discuss aspects of Knabstrupper breeding. And that's the best one to get onto. It's called the Knabstrupper Breeders Network page on Facebook.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, this has been so interesting. I've always wanted to learn more about them. And we thank you so much, Dr. Melanie Worth, for coming on and talking to us about the breed.
You're welcome. I'm always happy to talk about Knabstruppers.
Your horse's health deserves the highest standard of quality. And that's why Nutramax, the makers of Cosequin, maintains their own world-class manufacturing facilities in the United States, where they far exceed what is required of supplement companies. Nutramax works with top universities and researchers in their fields to make sure your horse has nothing but the highest quality supplements. With the mission of improving the lives of people and their horses, each product is backed by more than 80 quality checks and guaranteed to meet label claims so you can purchase with confidence. With over 30 years behind the Cosequin name, you can rely on Cosequin products for when performance matters. Visit Cosequin.com to learn more.
Well, I'm so excited to have one of Jennifer and I's old friends in the business, and she has a great book I wanted to talk about. It's actually the second edition of this book. I remember it from years ago, the first edition, June Evers of Horse Hollow Press. And June is an artist, a freelance graphic designer, an author. She has worked for many companies, including Briar Horses, American Horse Show Association, and many others. You know her because Horse Hollow Press is the one that puts out the funny bumper stickers all about horses. So if you have a bumper sticker that's about horses, it probably came from June. And June, I was trying to think how long ago this was. We met you when we had our retail store, and you were one of the first people we met when we went to our very first ADA, our trade show. And we walk in and June was there and you were one of the very first ones. So it's been a long time, my friend.
What year was that? Do you remember?
Well, we started in 98. So what, almost 30 years ago?
I've been doing this business since 1990. I started in a New York City apartment, believe it or not.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
In fact, I was on 15th and 8th, and I would have to duck the bullets at night with the cocaine fights. And I actually worked for Cosmopolitan Magazine as a graphic designer and met Helen Gurley Brown. So very interesting New York City days.
Wow. I hope you live in the country now where there's no bullets flying.
Yes, okay, I good. Do. Good.
Well, June, you've been doing this for a long time, too. And I wanted to talk to you today about the book that you sent me. And I want to give this away to a listener, too. So we're going to do that at the end of this interview. But it's Anyone Can Draw Horses. And this is the second edition. I remember the first edition. Has things changed in this one?
Yes, actually, they have. That's a great question. You caught me a little off guard. The one thing that I do want to point out, there's a couple of things in the book that are really important for equine artists or illustrators. And this may be new, is one, when you're working from a photograph, have you ever noticed, like you see the quarter horse photographs when the horse is facing the camera, the hind feet are on the same plane as the front feet? It's some sort of weird anomaly with a camera. And as an artist, you have to correct that and put perspective on your drawing. So the hooves are a little, you know, they're a little bit up from the front feet, so they're not on the same plane. It's hard to explain in a radio podcast like this, but in the book, it shows it. You make a proportional line to the horizon, and you can adjust your drawing to correct if you're working from a photograph.
Well, and that's
so there's that in there. And there's also another tip is if you can't figure out what's wrong with your drawing, take it to the bathroom, hold it up to the mirror. When you see it in reverse, it'll pop right out to you.
Huh. Well, and this book really does start from the beginning and is very, goes very basic for people like me who can't draw. I mean, that's what this book is meant for. It's meant to teach anybody how to draw a horse. And it really goes through steps, right?
Yeah, it does. Yes.
So you start with the head?
Yeah, you can start with the head. I love drawing hooves. But anyway, you can start with the head. The head is the easiest. In fact, there's a way that you can even start drawing a horse with just a straight line, and then you progress from there. There's, you know, you can start drawing with you know, creating like a rectangular shape to create the head and then work from that. But the most important thing, and I do have skulls here all over the place, I'm like a crazy woman, but is really to know the skull. And one thing I've noticed about an illustrator's work is the skull can be separated. If you look at the skull from the side, it can be separated into three parts. And a lot of illustrators or, you know, painters, equine painters, will make the from the eye to the muzzle a lot shorter than it really is. If you really think about it, the head is separated into three parts, looking at it from the side. And if yours is a little bit shorter, you might want to add a little bit more onto the nose. The horse's head is amazingly big. Wow. Even on a small horse.
And one of the cool things about your book is it's done in such a way, too, that you, if you want to, you can trace some of these designs and then start from there. So some of the basics and start from there. So you're not starting from scratch, which I kind of like that you did that in this book.
Yeah, tracing is an excellent way to teach your arm or your hand, you know, where the lines should go. I remember when I was a kid in grade school, you know, and I would go to the library at lunch and they had a lot of books there that you could, you know, literally put a piece of paper over and trace it. And it just teaches your hand where to go. You're not copying the person's art and you don't want to do that. But, and you can even do it on photograph. Again, you don't want to use that as your final drawing because there's copyright issues, but it'll help you get the position of where the muscles are, where there's a flat part to the knee, you know, the cannon bones. It's amazing how many straight lines. If you're drawing a leg from below the knee to the bottom, to the ground with the hoof included, it's surprisingly how many straight lines there are in a horse's leg.
Jamie, do you have any artistic ability at all? I've never asked you that.
Well, I have been drawing, because I'm a horse girl, I have been drawing horses my entire life, and I draw them exactly the same way that I did when I was like six. And so they all look like cartoons, but I notice on the cover, all your horses are facing left. I can only draw a horse facing the right. And again, it looks like a cartoon. So...
That is so funny because I can only draw faces to the left. I have to go into the computer, scan them in, go into the computer, and then change them to facing right.
Oh, funny. My God, right? Isn't that weird? I don't know why. They always face to the right. So I think I think I need this book.
That's funny. I guess even artists have their quirks, right? That certain things you can do well and certain things they take you a long time to master. Was there one part of the horse that took you the longest?
The head is really the most, because that's the most unique on a horse. You know, every horse's head is different. They've got all sorts of little bumps and bulges and weird things all over. So I think the head is the biggest study.
That is true. Because of the muscular, or the bone structure and the musculature are different. And then as they age, they all look different in the head.
Yeah, it's true. And you can always get creative with the mane and forelock.
Well, who would you say this book is for?
I think it's actually for two sets of people. It's definitely for the beginner or for, you know, children who are learning to ride or learning to draw and things like that. But it's also for the seasoned horse person who may be seasoned horse illustrator, drawer, painter, whatever, who may be set in their ways and has not really looked at their horses as they draw them and maybe needs like just a little brush up, especially the mirror trick. I have to tell you, going into the bathroom with your drawing, face it to the mirror and anything that's wrong with your drawing will come screaming out at you.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea.
Because when you're looking at it the whole time, but then you're not always seeing, you know, because you did it. You're not always seeing what you did, right? You're just, interesting.
Well, it's for somebody like me who it should know how to draw a horse, yet they all look like Disney cartoons. Yeah, basically.
No, great.
Yeah, I don't know.
Listen, if someone can stick a banana on a wall and sell it for $1 million.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's very true.
I'm still stuck at the stick figure part. So you're beyond me, Jamie. You've got me beat. Well, where can the people buy the book, June?
You can get it on horsehollowpress.com. That's horse like the animal, hollow like hollow log, and press like press grapes. .com or check in. We have it in a few retailers across the country. Most all tack stores, you know, tack or feed stores. You can get it there too, or ask them to order it.
And of course, they can get some of your other fantastic products. You have cards, you have bumper stickers, you have stickers. She sent me a couple of stickers. This one was relevant for us. It says, I wasn't going to drink, but, and it's a picture of the head of a manure fork with missing tines.
that makes me laugh every time I look at it.
Because that's been a conversation we've had recently about manure forks. So you sent away some cards and some stickers and the book, and we're going to give that away. I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll do it old radio style, like when Jamie used to be in radio. The 10th person to email me, glenn@horseradionetwork.com, with draw horses in the subject line, I'll send the book to. Put your address in your email. So the 10th person to email me, and it has to say draw horses in the subject line, I'll send this out to you. Definitely put your address in there. And June, thank you so much for joining us again. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Glenn. And it's so great to hear your voice. I swear, it really is really great to hear your voice.
Well, and you know, Ada is in Dallas now, so I don't see you all the time like I used to.
That show's gotten quite expensive. So and I've got other avenues. There's other avenues now to reach retailers.
From when I was a retailer, when the internet's first started, to now, the world has changed.
Oh my gosh. And there's a thing called FAIR where everybody seems to be going.
Well, I also want to thank you, June, for another thing. June is instrumental and probably the most important person in the retail world right now, in the horse retail world, for tax shops and businesses like that.
Gosh.
Now, you started a Facebook page years ago. I remember when you started it. We talked about it when you started it. And she started this retailer's Facebook page, and it is a huge resource now for thousands of retailers across the country in the horse world. And I wanted to thank you for giving them an outlet to learn from each other and to help each other out, too.
Oh, and they are, I tell you, if you've been shopping online, and we love our onliners too, but going into a tax store, smelling that leather, or going into a feed store and talking to the people, participating in their business is just wonderful. Our local tax store is just gorgeous. And the smell of leather and, all sorts of wonderful things, and the line of horse treats she has in there, you just can't, pass that up. It's really a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you for doing that for the industry. I know everybody appreciates it.
Well, thank you so much for mentioning that. Thank you.
Ever wondered if your saddle is causing your horse discomfort? Well, you're not alone. Many riders face this challenge, unsure how to prevent their horse from suffering due to an ill-fitting saddle. Saddle Fit for Life is here to help. With over 35 years, they've been the leader in evidence-based saddle fit education, working with over 300,000 horses from Olympic athletes to everyday trail horses. And now they're offering you a 7-day free trial of their internationally recognized saddle fit education program. Experience firsthand how understanding saddle fit can transform your horse's comfort and performance. Click on the link in the show notes to start your 7-day free trial with Saddle Fit for Life today.
Okay, so I was having a discussion, Glenn, with my family, my husband and my son, and we were sitting there talking about chores because I had to run down to the barn and get the horses up and all this stuff. And I just realized, I don't get a whole lot of help around here, but I do make Lucas help me clean stalls. And I don't know how it evolved into this conversation, but I just said to them, I was like, listen, what is your least favorite farm chore? Like, I don't know, weed eating or whatever, because I know Chad hates weed eating. And I was like, so he said weed eating. And I was like, no, with the horses. And now, mind you, we've been married 15 years. He doesn't help with the horses anymore. He just fixes what they break. But I ask him what his
least favorite... Which is an important job, too.
It's great, because I can't do it. I don't have the patience to put up fencing and stuff like that. But his least favorite job of all time, and this was back when we were in Arizona, was blanketing. He thinks blanketing horses is the worst farm chore job. When he's doing it, he's like, this is stupid.
I gotta kind of agree with him.
Because he was like, you have to reach down behind the back legs and pull something between it. No, that's stupid. That's stupid.
Especially with the horses you have there.
I mean, no, they're fine. My horses are fine. You know what? If you wouldn't come at them with that energy, okay, like you're going to die, then they're not going to try to kill you. And then I asked Lucas, and I knew exactly what his chore would be. Cleaning stalls.
Yeah.
He hates cleaning stalls. But it started a discussion And I realize I have a farm chore that I absolutely hate, and I should be better about it, but I'm not. It's cleaning tack. Oh my God. Cleaning tack is like doing homework to me. You know, it's like you have to sit down and like prepare and do all the things and like be still. So I don't like cleaning tack. So I asked the auditors on the auditor Facebook page, what were some of their least favorite chores, but also with a twist, what is their spouse's or their child's least favorite chore if they have either one of those things? So I was just going to go through a couple of them. Well, like a billion of them, because they're all awesome and hilarious, but I'll try to get to all of them. But I will just run through them. First of all, Glenn, what is your least favorite chore and what is Jennifer's least favorite chore?
Well, blankets are up there. I put blankets high on the list, but cobwebbing. I just hate cobwebbing. I just hate doing that. Does anybody like cobwebbing?
I do, and I'll tell you why. Because I got a blower that is psychotically powerful because I have the worm flooring in my barn now. So I had to get a higher level blower to be able to blow the barn out, because you can't sweep on it, which is nice. So I had to blow. So now I just aim the blower up and I'm like,
does it work?
Oh my God, it's amazing. It's amazing. I just blow the cobwebs out and then I blow the barn out and it's super fun. And so, yes, that part is fun. So you need to up your game with your blower.
Jennifer's, I asked her this morning too, hers is scrubbing buckets. And I can vouch for that because I end up doing this scrubbing of the buckets. Yeah. She hates scrubbing buckets.
I don't mind the scrubbing. It's the lugging full buckets, which is, yeah.
For some reason, they don't get any lighter when you get older either.
No. I'm like, they can drink half. It'll be fine. They'll be fine. So let's see. We're going to start with Nana. She said her blanketing, her kiddo hiking out to catch the horses in the pasture. Jessica says shoveling snow. Pulling the snow off the roof. She said that is her and her spouse's least favorite.
I'm with you. I hear you there.
I like Melissa. Her boyfriend said, I know they just wrote what the significant other said. And her quote is, I don't know, baby. They all kind of suck.
Need to get him on the show.
I know. Ashley, hers are stall cleaning buckets and her husband is cleaning stalls. Taylor says dumping the wheelbarrow. Her husband said, because I'm assuming that they just were like, hey, what's your least favorite barn chore? I got to type it in here. And her husband said, everything.
Was he talking to your husband?
I know, right? Gwen says she doesn't like scrubbing buckets. And then her husband said, anything involving hay. There you go. Let's see. Melanie says she doesn't like sweeping cobwebs. And when she turned to ask her husband, he said, I don't have barn chores.
And was that Melanie you said?
Well, yes.
She probably likes it that way too.
Exactly. Yeah. We plan
that's
that.
What keep them happy.
And Nikki says she hates sweeping and watering because she can't get herself to stay dry when she's watering horses. She asked her boyfriend what his least favorite chore was, and he said, all of them.
They're honest.
Noticing a trend. Kendra says at her barn, they have to fork hay off of the round bales and it is the worst.
We had to do that once or twice and that isn't fun.
Yeah, no, that's like you feel like an old school farmer.
Yeah,
like you got to get a metal pitchfork and chuck that out.
The only thing that would be more old school than that was having it set up like a teepee in the field and having to go get it from the teepee. That's even more old school.
Put it on the cart with the plow horses and they'll drag it out there. Elizabeth says dealing with winter water is what her significant other said.
Frozen
and she
buckets.
Said fencing the electric fence repair, because you cannot fix electric fences, side note, without getting shocked. It's just going to happen. Margaret says, catching horses in the pasture. Her boyfriend said, I don't know. I've never touched a horse or done barn chores a day in my life.
Is that one going to last? They're not married
Margaret,
yet.
Margaret, you got to get him trained to do something.
Is that one going to last?
At least something to where he hates it. You know, like find out what he truly hates. Kaylin says she hates mowing pasture. Her husband hates mucking stalls. And Charlie, her daughter, hates dumping and cleaning and refilling waters.
Can I go with the mowing here real quick? I want to saint the guy that invented the zero-turn mower. Whoever that guy was needs to be sainted, because that was the best invention to ever happen. I'm just saying.
Hey, speaking of shocking, yeah, the zero-turn's fun. But do you know what that supplement is? It's like a million years old. And I wanted to throw this out to anybody. You know, I should probably do this in the post show, actually. I'll do this part in the post show, but I've got a question about a supplement. All right. So moving on, Carol Carter hates doing cobwebs. Blower. There you go. Christine says, I hate carrying water.
Where do the spiders go when you blow them?
It's not my problem, Glenn.
I just blow them out. They're just on the floor and going to climb back up.
I set them free. I blow them out into the barn aisle and then out the door. Christine hates carrying water buckets. She said the handles just bite into your hands so much more than a heavy feed bucket. And her husband says, I have no idea what barn chores are. Or she wrote that about him. I don't know. Rich, one of our male listeners who owns and rides horses, he hates mowing. I guess, Glenn, what's your advice for Rich?
A very nice zero turn mower. And I don't hate mowing anymore. And I got the best weed whacker. And that one is a joy to use. And I don't even hate that anymore.
I think it's funny that you call them weed whackers and Chad calls them a weed eater.
Yeah.
What are they actually called?
I think they're called weed eaters. We always called them a weed whacker. I don't know.
I did too. And I grew up in Atlanta and Georgia and we call them weed whackers.
Do you remember the time this is a long time ago, I talked about this. This is our first farm after I met Jennifer. It was 100 acres and there were a lot of fence. So we had to weed whack under all the fence. And I'm weed whacking along and I weed whack and I look down and right where my weed whacker was a rattlesnake curled
up. Oh, dear God.
Looking at me and pissed now that I weed whacked above his head. And I had no choice.
Do you know what?
I weed whacked him in half because he was about ready to attack me. I didn't have a choice.
It was a function of survival. But
yes.
I will tell you that if I was weed whacking and a rattlesnake was under what I weed whacked, I would never weed whack again.
I was using the blade. You know how you can put a blade on the weed whacker sometimes when you're cutting thick or heavier weeds? Thank God the blade was on, because I'm not sure a string would have just pissed him off. I think that was just made him mad. It was kind of gross, though. The whole thing was kind of gross.
Ooh. Kelly says she doesn't like dumping and carrying water buckets. She doesn't mind cleaning them, but her significant others.
I'm surprised how many water buckets there are.
Yeah, people hate buckets. To be honest, when we moved here to this house, because my husband made me leave my perfect dream place in Arizona, he said, what is the one barn chore that takes the most time that you hate the most? And I said, water. And so we have automatic waterers now, because I was like, if you're moving me the hell out of here, upgrading.
Are they hard to clean? Some of them I've seen are hard to clean.
Not a commercial, but I have the Nelsons and you just pop the top off, scrub, put your hand in there, dump it out, fills it right back up. Okay. Now I have outdoor automatic waterers. We've like incrementally added them as we've lived here. And so I have two giant outdoor waterers at fence lines and those are annoying to clean.
Yeah,
because because the sun bakes them and they get gross. But I'm like, this is so much better than scrubbing a giant trough and dumping it. I just pull the drain plug out. Like, it's fine. So no big deal. I'm fine with it. All right. Moving on to our list. Kelly's a significant other says blanketing, it just doesn't make sense and it's dangerous.
All of that's true. It doesn't make straps are everywhere. They don't seem to go where they're supposed to. And then you put it on and the straps are all underneath and you got to take it off and take the straps back. What a pain.
And their horses are completely ungrateful.
Yes,
okay?
They are. And that whole back leg thing, I appreciate that back leg thing because it always makes me a little nervous putting that strap through. I'm like, I wouldn't want a strap through there.
Yeah.
If I were them, I'd pick me.
I've started looking for blankets that have that link that kind of like just goes butt cheek to butt cheek and goes under the tail. That one little thing. I really like that. I like the clips on the front, so I don't have to like...
Yeah, the clips on the front make a big difference.
Yeah, it's pretty
nice. I cannot do, and I've said this 1,000 times in the show, that tourney thing that you supply it in. And, oh, God, I hate that. They should be outlawed. They're just ridiculous. I can't do them.
Well, they're still in everybody's middle of blankets, so sorry. Nicole says her husband hates cleaning the duck coop and filling hay nets, and I would like to say, how do you get your husband to clean the coop and fill hay nets, because mine would never do that.
Well, I want to talk to her about how many ducks she has, so she actually has a coop.
Well, we have duck and chickens, and chickens, You don't understand how clean they are until you have ducks.
Is that right? They're worse.
Oh my God. They're the worst.
Do they smell as bad as the chickens?
It's not that they smell. They just, like, if you have a tiny little water bucket, they will jump in it and immediately poop. And I'm like, why are you that stupid?
You like, have a chickens, pond. You have an entire pond, which must be the size of a lake by now.
Go to the pond. Yeah, it's like 4 acres now because we've had all this rain.
Your pond's going to be in your house soon.
Uh-huh. Arsina says fencing. She hates fencing. And her husband hates feeding the horses in the spring thaw and the sheep.
Oh, mud. Yeah.
And he hates the spring thaw. She must live in a muddy, muddy place. Karen, our friend Karen Chatton, says that her significant other hates feeding hay in the wind. That's a man who's found hay in his underwear.
Yes.
Not going to lie.
Yes.
She says trying to pry frozen poop out of 2 feet of snow. Mm. That part sucks. Yeah. Mm. Angela says hunting for fly masks. And her husband says having to fix everything her horse Oki broke. Oki, a former horse and hound horse. Sorry. Lindsay says, what does it mean? Now, this is going to mess your brain up, because then this messed my brain up. She says, what does it actually mean when I have to think about what my least favorite barn chore would be, but I've got a whole entire list of least favorite house chores?
That just makes you worse, girl.
What's your least favorite house chore? Mine is laundry. So much so that I'm like, I'll just buy new underwear. And Chad's like, you have to wash your clothes. So guess who does the laundry? That's right.
Jennifer loves doing the laundry. She loves it. She loves folding the laundry. She loves I do the dishes and all that stuff because I do the most of the cooking too. But she does the laundry. She loves doing the laundry. She will not sweep the house. I have to do that part.
We all have our thing. Does she actually love it, or she just does it without complaining?
She watches TV and she sits in there. I think it's quiet time away from me. I'm not bugging her. I'm not saying, Jennifer, will you do this? So she sits in there and hides and folds laundry.
Oh, God. Katie says she hates thawing, dealing with frozen troughs in the winter. And her significant other says anything he has to stay calm for, which would indicate a fairly high-strung personality.
A little type A, huh?
Jane Ann says,
prize on that one, actually.
That was really good. That was really good. Jane Ann says, watching the weather like a crazy person to decide whether to blanket, what time to blanket, and which blankets are needed. Yes. And her husband says, having to fix anything the horses have broken without permission.
They never break the thing that's going to need fixed eventually, that you know you should have fixed like a year ago. They never break that. That stays up. Yeah. It's the thing that was brand new that you put in that they kick apart.
Of course, always. Yeah. Fix a board, break the board. That's the thing. Jennifer says stacking hay and tarping round bills. Yeah, that would suck.
Oh, stacking hay has to be up there for everybody. If you've got, we used to get it by the tractor trailer truckload.
This is where I'm really, really going to miss Farm Boy this summer.
Yeah, stacking hay sucks.
I was like, I got you a truckload of hay. And he's like, oh, good, exercise. And I'd be like, you're a blessed angel.
And now he's gone. And now they have the 3-string bales that Jennifer and I can't even lift by ourselves. It takes two of us. Oh, God.
Even though you may save a dollar a bale on weight, I won't do it because I can't do that to my husband.
Yeah. Your shoulders either. You can't.
No. It's what Chad does it. And he actually loves stacking 2-string bales now because he's like, these are so much better. Yeah. Jennifer's husband says mucking stalls that have horses in them.
Oh, I can see that too.
Even I won't do that. I mean, it's just more annoying. It just takes 10 times as long. So, Jennifer, get the damn horse out of the stall for your husband.
Do you use a muck tub or wheelbarrow?
Me?
Yeah.
So, I drive the Ranger down. A little wagon that I attach to my Ranger. I call it my poo wagon. And I just chuck it all out into the poo wagon.
Okay. Well, that's easier without horses. If you have horses in the stall, then the door's open. So
The door's open and they're gone. Yeah. So yeah, no, I used to have, I mean, I've worked at every barn where you did every type of stall mucking. The wheelbarrows that you had to push all the way up the steep ramp into the dumpster. I've done you have the muck tub and you have to lift that up and put it into
the
wheelbarrow up spreader.
The ramp. Oh, that's bad. And how many times have you gone off the ramp and dropped it?
It's like, Oh my God. I was a working student in North Carolina and Southern Pines, and it was like their coldest winter ever. And this was like a three-tier up ramp, like up and go left and then up and go right and then up and then dump it. I mean, we lost a working student a year.
Slip off the ramp and hurt themselves.
Bye. I broke my leg. I got to go to the hospital. See you next year. Yeah. No, it sucks. Like, that's the worst.
All right. Time
yeah,
for one
so,
more.
So with my farm, well, no, there's so many.
I know. We only have time for one more.
Okay, well, let's see. Holly says her husband says stacking hay in the barn because, quote, why do we always do this when it's hot as
beep? That is true. That's true. It's only July.
It's so true. Okay, well, sorry I didn't get to the rest of them. We have so many that are so great. And yeah, if anybody wants to come clean my tack, I'll scrub your water buckets
you
for
know,
you.
You were the only one that said that. That's kind of surprising.
I was
maybe
shocked.
People just don't clean their tack and don't even think about it because they never do it.
That could be, but I got a bougie bridle and saddle. Like So there was a tack salesperson, and I trained her horses in exchange for tack. So I now have a very fancy bridle and a very fancy saddle, and they require cleaning.
Ugh. You can't do what I do with my synthetic harness to throw it in the dishwasher. You can't do that.
No, can't do that. I do have a Wintec, that Wintec saddle for Miles, the extra wide one. And I do love that. I was like, Farm Boy and I were riding together because he was in for a couple days and it started raining on us. And I was like, I'm in my Wintec. I don't care. Like, it's raining. This is great. So yeah, it happens.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us. We appreciate it. Otters, hang on. We have to do a garden update because I have an update in our garden and I'm really mad about it. And then I have a product I want to recommend, a horse husband product review for you that is $13 and changed my life. And then you had something you wanted to talk about. So we'll get to all of that in the post show. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it. Take care, everybody. Be safe.
All right, spay, neuter, geld. Don't come in knocking my house tonight. I won't be wearing clothes.